They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.
All right, folks, welcome to another live program here at Dixie Broadcasting, and you are tuned in to another Pelican Pages interview here at Dixie Broadcasting. As many of our listeners know, Pelican Publishing Company is one of the major sponsors of Dixie Broadcasting Radio, and to be quite honest with you, they're one of the reasons that you're able to listen to Southern Heritage Radio 24 hours a day, 365 and a quarter days a year. And so we're very grateful to Pelican Publishing, and one of the things that we like to do in order to let you and I both get familiar with Pelican Publishing and the authors that they publish is to introduce us to a different author or two each month along the way here at Dixie Broadcasting through our Pelican Pages interviews. And tonight is no different. We have a very special guest with us tonight via the telephone line, and we have Mr. John Griffin with us. Dr. John Griffin is the author of a book published by Pelican entitled Abraham Lincoln's Execution. And as we get into discussing a little bit about the book and its premise in just a few minutes, you're going to find it's something new that I guarantee you you've never heard or read before about Abraham Lincoln's execution, unless you have a copy of John's book. Let me start out, though, by saying that if you're interested in John's book tonight, as we're discussing it online, you can actually go to the Pelican website at ePelican.com, and you can click on the browse button at the top of the website there and type in the name of the book, Abraham Lincoln's Execution, or you can type in John's name, John Chandler Griffin, and it'll pull this book up for you. You can read about the summary of the book right there on the website, and if you purchase it online there at Pelican, you can actually purchase it at a reduced price. So I encourage you to do that. That's ePelican.com if you want to look at that on the website while we're listening to the interview tonight. Now, I want to tell you just a little bit about John as we begin. He is a native Southerner, born in McCall, South Carolina in 1936, and he has spent an entire career teaching at the University of South Carolina, and was awarded the Order of the Silver Crescent by Governor Hodges just several years ago because of his works in writing about Southern history and Southern heritage, especially for the state there, his native South Carolina. So, John, thank you very much for being on the program with us tonight.
Yeah, listen, it's a real pleasure, right? I'm looking forward to it.
Well, John, I assure you that you're among very friendly company this evening, because the listeners at Dixie Broadcasting could not be friendlier to anyone other than a native South Carolinian who has written so many books about the South and Southern history. And so I assure you the folks that are listening tonight are folks that are happy to have you on the program, and we're all friends. So
that's great. Thanks so much. Glad to hear that.
Well, John, why don't you, if you would, I've given us a little bit of a nutshell about who you are, but tell us really who is John Griffin, and how did you become interested in Southern things in general growing up?
Well, Ray, I was raised by my grandmother in McCall, South Carolina, and her father fought in the war between the states. And, of course, he lived until 1922, and so he told her a great many stories about the war, and she related them to me, and to me it seemed very immediate. Not like just something you read about in a history book, but it was something that Grandpa actually participated in, so it seemed very real to me all the time as I was growing up. And so I became interested in the South and the Civil War, you know, very early in life.
Now, this particular topic, Abraham Lincoln's execution, how did you become interested in this specific subject related to the war era?
People have asked me, well, was all this your idea? Did you come up with this idea? And I said, no. In fact, the day after he was murdered, it was all over Washington, D.C., that he was executed by members of the federal government.
Wow.
And so, no, I just picked up on it. And then when I was in high school, I read a book, and I'm trying to think of his name. He was a German chemist whose hobby was a war between the states, and he suspected some foul play there. And so he wrote a great book on it himself. This was back, I think it was published in 1937. But I've remembered it all these years because I read it when I was in high school, and I've remembered it all these years, and so I started doing some research into it myself. And the more, you know, the further I went, the more I became convinced that he was right.
Well, folks, you're going to hear
Eisenschimmel. Otto Eisenschimmel.
I'm glad you're saying that and not I.
Yeah.
Folks, you're going to hear over the next few minutes something that for many of us we've never heard about the possibilities of, or maybe we should say the probabilities of what really happened around the Lincoln assassination or the Lincoln execution. It's going to be something that you've probably never heard in any high school or college textbook that you've ever read or been quizzed over. You're going to find it interesting. Now, John, before we talk about the premise of your book, would you give us just a short version of the standard story about the Lincoln assassination?
Yeah, that's what I call the official party line out of Washington. And as a rule, most of what you might call the mainliners, the mainline history professors all over the country, they never deviate from the official party line out of Washington. It would be politically incorrect to do that, to contradict the official party line. And so they are, most of these, the mainliners will stick strictly to the official party line. I've always sort of enjoyed being out of the mainstream and maybe being just a little politically incorrect.
I think most of us in the Southern movement are.
Yeah, and at any rate, the official party line has it that Abraham Lincoln was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth, and John Wilkes Booth and his fellow conspirators were nothing more. He was just one of those long nut assassins, the same sort of fellow that assassinated John F. Kennedy, you know, long nut assassin, same story. In fact, it's very similar stories there about Kennedy and Lincoln. But that's all there was to it. He was just a disgruntled Southerner, and he just took it upon himself to get revenge on Lincoln, so he shot him.
Now, John, tell us then, what is your premise in this book, Abraham Lincoln's Execution? Because it's radically different than what we've all been told from that party line all these years growing up.
Yeah, well, let me say this. One of my main pieces of evidence, primarily my thesis is circumstantial evidence, you might say. But people have gone to the gallows based on less evidence than we have here. But in 1959, a fellow named Ray Knepp, who was a New Jersey chemist, his hobby was the war between the states, and he was in a bookstore one day looking at an old documents from the war between the states, and dated 1864, and he bought it. It was just put in his collection. Anyway, he took it home, and he noticed when he was reading it that somebody had gone through this document and underlined certain words with a pencil. And he recognized it as some sort of code, but he didn't speak code or couldn't decipher code, so he contacted a friend of his who was in the Army working in codes, and his friend deciphered it for him. And it was written by Lafayette Baker, who was Edwin Stanton's chief of the National Detective Service, a forerunner of the Secret Service. And so the friend read it for him, and this was code written by Lafayette Baker, and told the whole story of Lincoln's execution. And in that document, Baker stated that Edwin Stanton and Andrew Johnson were behind the execution, that they planned it and got him and Major Thomas Eckert to take care of the details, which is to say to contact John Wilkes Booth in Booth Falls.
Wow.
Which he did. And he told he had autographed this in invisible ink and whatnot. At any rate, you know, he told why they wanted to do it and so on. And the problem was, as the war was drawing to an end, Lincoln changed his tune as far as punishing the South was concerned. Throughout the war, you know, he talked about punishing the South. But then as the war was drawing to a close, he changed his tune, and now he was saying no punishment for the South. There would be no reconstruction in the South. The South would not be laid open to be robbed and pillaged at every turn. And that's not what these people wanted to hear. They wanted to rob and pillage the South. They would reward themselves and their Republican supporters in the North. But Lincoln said, no, we're not going to do that. They're going to be welcomed back into the Union with open arms, with all their constitutional rights restored, just as though they had never been away. And again, that's not what they wanted to hear. And so they resolved to kill him.
Wow.
And, of course, they knew once he was killed that Andrew Johnson, the old South hater, would become president. And Johnson, you know, had already assured them that we would have the punitive Reconstruction. And I devote an entire chapter to Lafayette Baker's writings about this. It's very interesting, fascinating, in fact. And it just verifies, you know, what I'd already thought. Lincoln just signed his own death warrant. Just a few days before he was killed, he secretly allowed the state legislature in Virginia to meet and assigned a general, a Union general in Richmond, to act as their bodyguards.
Really?
And ordered this general that this must be kept an absolute secret from everyone. But the first thing the general did when he got the order was to contact Edwin Stanton and inform him of what Lincoln was doing.
Uh-huh.
And so that just really signed Lincoln's death warrant whenever Stanton found out that he was allowing the Virginia state legislature to meet.
Now let's stop for just a second here, John, and talk about some of these key players that we're mentioning here who were a part of the Lincoln administration, because many of our listeners may know them by name but may not really be familiar with who they are.
Okay.
Let's start with Vice President Andrew Johnson.
Yeah.
Now, he was a Tennessean and a Southerner, obviously.
Right.
Why was he so anti-South, being a Southerner himself, and what was he doing in the Lincoln administration in the first place?
Well, actually, he was a Democrat, and Lincoln was Republican, of course.
Yes, sir.
And Lincoln thought if he would replace Hannibal Hamlin as vice president with Andrew Johnson, a Democrat, that would increase his vote. He was very doubtful that he would be reelected in 1864. But he did that. He chose Aunt Johnson as his running mate. Plus, just before the election, Sherman occupied Atlanta.
Right.
And those were the two things that got him reelected in 1864.
That's right.
And Johnson, he was called the old South hater, and all he preached was punishment for the South until he became president. Once Lincoln was killed, he became president. He was both these fellows were extremely ambitious. And it occurred to Johnson, hey, you know, I'd like to be elected president again in 1868. And how can I do that? I know. I'll get the support of all these Southern senators who are now, you know, disenfranchised.
Right.
And what he did, he started calling these Southern politicians up to Washington. And they would get behind closed doors, and he would promise them listen, if you'll support me in 1868, I promise you there will be no Reconstruction in the South. Mm-hmm. And so Edwin Stanton found out what was going on. Stanton, by the way, you know, was the Secretary of War.
Right.
Most unscrupulous, ambitious human being. At any rate, Stanton found out about it and stationed his secret agents in Johnson's office, working around Johnson's office, so they could listen and observe everything going on there. Johnson found out about it and fired Edwin Stanton. Only Congress had just passed a law that the president could no longer fire cabinet members. It had to be done by Congress. And so that's why they impeached Andrew Johnson, because he tried to fire Edwin Stanton.
Mm.
I mean, it was just really a terrible period in our history. One historian's written a great book on that era called The Age of Hate. And you know, that's a very, very accurate description of how things were done in government back then.
We weren't very far from the reign of terror of the Jacobins and the French Revolution, were we?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Now, let's also mention then Secretary of War Stanton.
Oh, boy.
He certainly was no friend of liberty to any American.
No, in fact, he's been accused by some military men, military leaders at that time during the war, of intentionally prolonging the war, because during the war he was the most probably the most influential, most powerful man in America as the Secretary of War. And that he intentionally prolonged the war so as to further cement his position as the most powerful man in America so that he could run for president in 1868.
Mm. Now, is he the cabinet member who is on record as having told one reporter that he could literally ring a bell on his desk and have any American in any state arrested and imprisoned by midnight?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Ray. That's exactly right. Well, in fact, they did that. You know, Lincoln, Congress was in recess whenever he ordered the firing on Fort Sumter and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was carrying the ball by himself. I mean, it was Lincoln's war. He goaded the South into firing the first shot. And we bit hook, line, and sinker, which was exactly what he wanted us to do so he could blame us
right.
for starting the war.
Right.
It was terrible. But he did that, and now what was your question again? I'm getting off on the subject.
I was asking, is Stanton the one that had bragged he could ring a bell?
Right,
and
that's right. Lincoln, you know, like I say, Congress is in recess, and so Lincoln took it upon himself to suspend the writ of habeas corpus, which he didn't have the authority to do. Only Congress can do that.
Right.
And so he suspended the writ of habeas corpus, which gave him the authority to arrest any citizen who criticized him or his war. They would do the same with newspapers. They closed down dozens of newspapers in the North that were critical. Usually they'd have his soldiers pick up the editor, throw him into jail, and then burn down the newspaper.
Wow.
And that happened all over the North. He was... gosh, most unscrupulous politician once he became president.
You certainly don't hear those things being read about in any of your high school history textbooks about things happening in the North.
No, for good reason. You know, if you remember back, I'm older than you are. I'm older than everybody in the world, I think. But back in the 60s, Abraham Lincoln became the poster boy for civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
And to criticize Abraham Lincoln suddenly... You criticize Abraham Lincoln, that means you're a racist automatically.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And despite the fact that there was really no reason for him to be, you know, to be looked up to by the Afro-Americans, because he didn't do anything for them he didn't have to do.
That's right. And he certainly wasn't any friend of civil liberties.
Oh, no, gosh, no. In fact, his main plan for the free slaves was to send them all back to Africa.
Hmm.
Henry Clay started an organization known as the American Resettlement Society, and they were taking freed slaves, putting them on ships, and sending them back to Africa, or sending them to Africa. And when Henry Clay died in 1856, Then Abraham Lincoln became president of the society, and he continued that plan all through the war between the states. And, you know, as far as the Emancipation Proclamation is concerned, that freed slaves in areas occupied by the Confederate Army. Did not free slaves in those areas occupied by the Union Army, which is to say it didn't free any.
The whole
purpose of it, really, was in hopes of keeping England and France out of the war on the South Side.
Right.
And
it worked, which it managed to do. That's right. Now, Lafayette Baker, tell us a little bit about him.
Oh, boy. Now, he was another... He worked for Pinkerton initially as a private detective. And then he was hired by the federal government and became head of the National Detective Agency, which is a forerunner of the Secret Service.
Okay.
And he was a most unscrupulous man. And in that document I told you about that he had written in code, he told why he had left this document. He said that he knew too much. He knew where too many of Stanton's bodies were buried, and that they were going to murder, he feared they were going to murder him too, keep him quiet.
Wow.
And sure enough, he was murdered in 1868. And to date, the murder's never been solved. Somebody gave him arsenic.
Wow.
And he died.
Wow. And now there was
just a whole bunch of unscrupulous people running around back then.
Now, folks, we're talking to Dr. John Chandler Griffin. He is the author of a book by Pelican Publishing entitled Abraham Lincoln's Execution. And if you think you know the story about the Lincoln assassination, then you're going to be challenged to rethink everything you've ever been taught before after reading John's book. And it's about 450-plus pages of information. And John himself admits that some of it is circumstantial, but when you read these 450-plus pages of circumstantial evidence and the words of some of these very men themselves who were involved in the entire thing, you begin to get a totally different picture than what we've been taught all our lives. Well, we're going to take a break here in just a minute and let John catch his breath and get a drink of water. And then we're going to come back and talk to him some more about the book itself and about this this premise, this thesis of maybe what actually did happen on the day of Lincoln's execution and why it happened and what the consequences were. So don't go anywhere. You want to stay right here for this Pelican Pages interview. Remember, you can look the book up online while you're listening to the broadcast tonight at epelican.com. Here now is the McGowan Band from South Carolina. John, are you familiar with them?
No, I'm not, Ray.
Well, you're going to enjoy this song. This is the McGowan Band from South Carolina, and they're singing Hail Carolina, Free at Last.
Oh, boy.
The deed is done. The die is cast. The glorious Rubicon has passed. Strong in the right, I see your stand. Where ocean bays the shelving sand, she turns aloft her flashing eye, radiant her star on high. Silent along those azure deeps, its course her silver crescent keeps. Hail Carolina, free at last. Her sons proclaim her free once more. Firmly set her bonds we sever. Let all the host of earth assail. Echoes the wide resounding shore, with voice above the Atlantic roar. O land lived among the world. A mighty struggle and evil decree. Her people have arisen and are free. Hail Carolina, free at last. Her sons proclaim her free once more. Fathers fought for freedom, and the sons for freedom fight. Their God was with the fathers, and is still the God of right. But victory follows where the sons of freedom go. Signaling the onset is the death knell of the foe. And holy is the place where he was bravely met.
Writer once said, "Talent alone cannot make a writer. There must be a man behind the book, by birth and quality." As the only major Southern publishing house, Pelican Publishing believes that there is something valuable about our Southern way of life, about who we are, and about this place we call home, something worth putting down in written word on the printed page for future generations. Pelican Publishing is proud of our contribution to helping preserve the history and heritage and culture of the South, and we welcome submissions from authors new and experienced here at Pelican. Our family of authors includes some of the best-known names in Southern heritage today, plus a whole lot more. So whether it's about history or heritage, travel or trees, cooking or culture in general, if it's about the South, Pelican should be your first choice. Visit our website at epelican.com to find out about submitting your own book for consideration. Pelican Publishing, giving Southern authors a better choice. All right, welcome back to this Pelican Pages segment, and tonight we're talking to Dr. John Chandler Griffin. John is the author of a book by Pelican entitled Abraham Lincoln's Execution, and totally unravels everything we've ever been taught about who was really behind the Lincoln assassination. And John, it's been interesting to read the book. I can't say I've finished it yet, but I'm anxious to get to the end to get all the evidence. And we certainly don't want to give away all of the pieces on the interview tonight, because we want folks to buy the book and read it. But tell us just a little bit, what were the things that were motivating Stanton and Andrew Johnson, and how did they actually come together, you think, to work this plot out?
Well, both were extremely ambitious, unscrupulous men, and also very intelligent men, and that was sort of a bad combination as far as Abe Lincoln and his long life was concerned, because they both wanted to be president and would do anything to get that, and so neither needed much persuasion. As far as Johnson is concerned, he became Lincoln's vice president in March of, well, actually he's elected in November of 64, but they were sworn in March of 65. So he'd only been vice president for about a month when Lincoln was executed.
Wow.
And the thing is, at the inauguration, where they were sworn in, Johnson, who had a severe drinking problem, he showed up at the inauguration just dead drunk. And the authorities tried to get Johnson to sit down and be quiet, and he refused. He insisted on getting up and making a long, rambling, drunken speech. And Lincoln was humiliated. And after that, he would not speak to Johnson. In fact, he snubbed him every chance he got, and swore that he was going to dump Johnson at the first opportunity. And, you know, here's another parallel with John F. Kennedy's assassination. At any rate, Johnson was aware that he was going to get dumped. And so now he had a choice to make. Once Stanton approached him, he had a choice to make. He could either get dumped and go back home to Tennessee and become a tailor again, or he could become President of the United States. And for Johnson, it wasn't much of a decision to make. Same with Lyndon Johnson in 1963, you know.
Wow.
But at any rate, Johnson, it wasn't much of a decision for Johnson to make. He would much prefer to become President of the United States. And so he collaborated with Stanton and the others. According to Lafayette Baker, by the way, Baker says that they were not the only ones involved in the execution. He said there were numerous congressmen who also had prior knowledge that this was going to happen. Also high-ranking military officers. And he says the governor of one northern state was involved in it. Another, it was according to Lafayette Baker, it was a fairly wide-ranging conspiracy.
Sounds like Mr. Lincoln was about the only one that didn't know it was about to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. And by the way, as far as John Wilkes Booth is concerned, make no mistake about it, Booth worked for the Confederate Secret Service. Booth was working with the Confederate Secret Service. John Surratt, one of his conspirators, John Surratt was working with the Secret Service. And so was Lewis Powell, alias Lewis Payne. All three of them were up to their ears with the Confederate Secret Service. And they had never had any intentions of harming Abraham Lincoln. Their goal, their plot all the way through for the past 9 months, had been to kidnap or abduct Abraham Lincoln and take him back to Richmond.
Hmm.
And once he arrived in Richmond, they were then going to exchange him for Confederate prisoners of war.
Sounds like they might not have gotten anything for him.
Yeah. Recently, the Union had refused to exchange prisoners anymore.
Right.
Of course, they didn't need to, except for humanitarian reasons. The South didn't have the food or the medicine to take care of their prisoners of war, and they tried to explain that to the Union, and the Union didn't want to hear it. And so after the war was over, what did they do? They executed
Henry Wirtz.
Yeah, as though it was all his fault.
That's right.
But in fact, they were doing everything they could to exchange prisoners with him. At any rate, that was their goal. They were going to use Lincoln to exchange prisoners. And so nothing was ever said about harming Lincoln until the day it happened, late that afternoon. Booth, somebody contacted Booth, Colonel Lafayette Baker, and explained to him that if he wanted to save the South, he'd have to assassinate Lincoln, who was going to have this very punitive Reconstruction program, and so on and so on,
mm-hmm.
and persuaded Booth to pull the trigger. Andrew Johnson and Booth, by the way, were old friends. Back when Johnson had been governor of Tennessee, Booth was playing on the stage in Knoxville. And it was well known that Booth and Johnson kept these two women as mistresses. And they were frequently seen together, the four of them, at various night spots around Knoxville. So it was well known that. And in fact, late in the afternoon of the day of the assassination, Booth called on Johnson at his hotel and left a very incriminating note for him. And so Johnson had his hands full the next day trying to explain to Congress why he had a note in his box from John Wilkes Booth on the day of the execution.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, now, the two of them being associated together prior to Washington, D.C., certainly is something that none of us have ever heard before.
Yeah, in fact, Booth was a frequent visitor to Johnson.
Now, what happened to John Wilkes Booth after all this came down?
Well, that's another story. Supposedly, he was killed in Mr. Garrett's barn, Farmer Garrett, in his barn in Northern Virginia, by Sergeant, that's the sergeant's name that killed him.
I can't recall right now.
At any rate, he was a psychotic fellow. And he disobeyed orders and murdered John Wilkes Booth. And, in fact, was charged with murder, but then Edwin Stanton stepped in and dropped the charges. At any rate, supposedly, Booth was killed there. But there is strong evidence that he was not killed there, that he escaped. That was not Booth who was killed in the barn, it was someone else, another Confederate soldier. That Booth himself escaped. Eventually made his way to Granbury, Texas, and lived in Granbury, Texas for a good many years under the alias John St. Helen. Made good friends with an attorney there and told him the whole story. And then in later years, he moved to Enid, Oklahoma, and lived under an alias there. What was it? George, I can't remember his alias, but at any rate, he committed suicide there in 1906. On his deathbed, you know, he told everybody the story that he was John Wilkes Booth, and said he could no longer live with his conscience, that he had killed the best friend the South ever had, and that he could no longer live with his conscience, and so he committed suicide by taking arsenic, in fact. Not long after that, this lawyer who had befriended him in Texas came and claimed the body, took the body to a team of doctors in Chicago, and they examined the body in detail, and they said the body matched all the wounds and scars and whatnot that John Wilkes Booth had in life, and said that they were satisfied that it was John Wilkes Booth. This lawyer who claimed the body took him back home to Memphis now and put him in the garage, tried to sell him to Henry Ford. Henry Ford had this magnificent museum. And so he tried to sell the body to Henry Ford, but at the last minute, Henry Ford decided he didn't want to buy it, so he backed out. And so then, I know it's starting to sound like a soap opera, but then the lawyer died, and there was the body in the garage, and the lawyer's wife wasn't sure what to do with it, and so she rented it out to a traveling carnival, and that's the last that's ever been seen of John Wilkes Booth's body, so nobody knows where it is now.
What a story.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, you know, John, with all of the different things that were involved in this story surrounding Lincoln's execution, the Lincoln suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, and Edwin Stanton running the federal government with an iron fist, people being arrested and imprisoned as quote unquote domestic terrorists, if we could use that modern day term, and all sorts of things. All these things going on sounds remarkably similar to today, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. I think about that all the time. I really do.
It's almost more than one wants to think about sometimes,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, John, I, before we finish up the interview tonight, I'd like to ask you, we do this with all of our Pelican authors that we have on the program. Tell us how you became acquainted with Pelican Publishing and ended up having your books published with them.
I was reading a book that was published by Pelican, and I was searching for a publisher at that time, and I just happened to be reading a book by Pelican, and I liked it. I thought they did a good job. And so I called Nina Coy down there. She's a chief editor. And I explained my book to her. She said, well, send it to us. You know, we'll take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. And they took it. And, you know, so I've been very pleased with Pelican.
Well, tell us about the other book that you currently have with Pelican.
Yeah. Just last December, I guess, I published another book with Pelican about a boy from Darlington, South Carolina. This book has nothing to do with the war between the states. This boy, his name is Bill Farrell. He was an outstanding young man. He attended the University of South Carolina, and in 1940, he joined the Air Corps and became a pilot, flying a B-25 medium bomber. And he volunteered for Doolittle's raid on Tokyo in April of 42.
Mm.
And at any rate, the next day he went down in China. His plane went down in China, and he and his crew were captured by the Japanese and put in prison. And several months later, in October, Farah and his gunner were both they were accused of committing war crimes. Strafing school children, bombing hospitals, doing all sorts of crazy things, which was not true.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, the Japanese sentenced them to death, and so they took them out and executed Bill and his gunner on his plane.
My goodness.
And like I say, Bill Farrell was just such an outstanding young man, and you know, just really such a shame that a young man had his life snuffed out that way for no reason. He never committed any crimes. And
sure.
But at any rate, I thoroughly enjoyed doing the research on Bill Farrell. He was very inspirational. In fact, you remember Charlie Duke, the astronaut?
Yes.
Moonwalking astronaut?
Mm-hmm.
Walked on the moon in, what, 1969, I think? At any rate, he's a born-again Christian. And so I asked Bill, I called him on the phone, I called him and asked him if he would write an introduction to this book because it's such an religious and inspirational book.
Yes, sir.
And he said, well, I don't know, send me the manuscript and I'll take a look at it and I'll let you know. I said, okay. So I did, and as it turned out, he called me and said, yeah, I'd be honored to write an introduction. So he did, and, you know, I'm very proud to have that in the book, too, from Charlie D.
That's great. Now, any books that are in the works for us coming up, maybe?
Yeah. Ray, it occurred to me 6 months ago, I guess, that Abraham Lincoln was born in 1809, which was, be 200 years ago in 2009. So I suspected that he'd probably be crawling out of the woodwork next year on the bicentennial of his birth.
I'm afraid we'll have to see his ugly face everywhere.
Well, you're going to see a bunch of them in my book if Pelican takes it. I called Pelican and I told him, I said, hey, you know, this is bicentennial of his birth, and I'd like to do it like a pictorial biography. And they said, well, good, you know, you're probably right. Go ahead and get to work on it and send it to us when you finish. And so I'm just finishing it up now. In fact, I'm putting the final details on it now. And so I'm hoping Pelican might take that.
Well,
like I say, Ray, I born and bred Southern, raised by my grandmother. But I don't have any bones to pick with Abraham Lincoln. I'm not in love with him, but I try to take a scholarly approach to these things. I try to present the evidence, and I go where the evidence leads me. And, you know, I expect the reader to do the same thing. And in this case, Abraham Lincoln was a very admirable sort of fellow up until he became president. And once he became president, my Lord, he became one of the most unscrupulous characters, you know, I've ever studied. And I just don't know, you know, what was going on there. One fellow, about a year ago, wrote a book. Maybe you've heard about it. And he claims that Abraham, the real Abraham Lincoln, was kidnapped and held, was chained up in the basement of the White House, and an imposter took his place, you know.
Now, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. By the way, I have a good friend who's a Pelican author. He's just published a book on General Sherman and his war crimes against the Southern people.
Yes.
Brian Sisko. Have you talked with Brian? I mean,
yes, sir. We actually had Brian on here just a little over a month ago on another Pelican Pages interview. Yes, sir.
Okay.
We sure
did. Yeah, Brian's a good friend of mine. Huh?
Well, great. Well, John, are you a member of any Southern organizations?
Yes, sir. I'm a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans here in Lancaster County.
Great.
It's a Witherspoon Barnes camp in Lancaster County.
Great.
And I'm a member there.
Well, John, we want to thank you not only for being on the program, but for bringing to light this incredible story that probably none of us out there have heard growing up about the events that surrounded Lincoln's execution and who some of the principal players were that certainly were involved in that.
Yeah.
That we've never heard about.
Well, Rafe, now I try to present it orally this way. It sounds sort of disjointed, because there are so many characters involved and details involved, but believe me, it sort of makes sense and everything sort of comes together in my book about it.
Well, folks, I can tell you it's certainly a book that will make for very enjoyable reading for you. Abraham Lincoln's Execution by John Chandler Griffin. You can look at it on the Pelican website by going to epelican.com, and you can click on the browse tab there at the top of the website and just type in the name of the book, Abraham Lincoln's Execution, or type in John Griffin as the author, and it'll pull the book up there for you. You can purchase it online from the Pelican website at a reduced price, and it's certainly a book that you're going to find enjoyable. 450 pages packed with information surrounding Lincoln's execution, and a lot of information that I guarantee you you've never heard or read anywhere else before. So, John, we want to thank you again for being on the program tonight, and when your new book comes out, we'll certainly look forward to having you back, maybe.
Thank you, Ray. Thank
yes,
you
sir.
So much.
God bless you.
Yes,
and folks,
sir.
That's going to do it for another Pelican Pages interview. We've got plenty more music coming up all night tonight here at Dixie Broadcasting, so just sit back, relax, and enjoy it until you're ready to hit the sack.